So next comes the even harder part. How do we decode this hubbub into anything meaningful? It's essentially just a bunch of different pitches and volumes reaching our ears. Here's Jenny Bisley again.
So we have some clues about how the brain does this. So we know, for example, that many natural sounds, like people's voices, have a pitch associated with them. And sounds with a pitch tend to be harmonic. So that means that they have some fundamental frequency, the lowest frequency, which is what we think of as the pitch. So for example, for the A string on a cello, that's 220 hertz. But there'll also be energy at multiples of that. So at 440, 660, 880, and so on.
It helps to imagine it as a ladder, where each step represents energy at a different frequency. We interpret it as one lovely tone, but really it's many layered over the top of each other. Our voices do this too.
And the brain is aware of that kind of pattern, so it will be able to essentially associate sounds that have that, or sound components that have that harmonic structure, and group them together. And we know that it does that because if in the lab we create a sound that is harmonic, but we mess around with it so that we take one of those particular harmonics and shift it a little bit in frequency, then actually perceptually you'll go from hearing a single note to actually hearing two distinct sound sources. There are other cues that your brain can use. So sound components that come from the same source tend to change together in time. So they'll get louder together and quieter together. And they'll also tend to come from the same place in space. So there are all of these hints that the brain can use to try and make a model of how the sounds that have arrived at the ear have actually sort of existed in the world beforehand.
Do we use any other sort of senses when we're trying to untangle this mess?
We, without really realising it, integrate information across our senses all of the time. So this is particularly true for vision and for hearing. So there are specific examples you can think of where integrating visual information with what you hear can be helpful to you. So for example, our ability to localize a sound in space is really good. We can tell apart sounds that are about 1 degree difference, that's sort of the width of your thumb at arm's length. But vision is sort of 20 times better than that. So it makes sense that you integrate information about where you see something coming from with where you hear it coming from. Another example of when it's really helpful to be able to see what you're trying to listen to is if you're listening to a voice in a noisy situation, so a restaurant or a bar. If you can see a speaker's mouth movements, then that actually gives you additional information about what they're saying. So the mouth movement that you make for example, a f sound is very different from the mouth movement that you make for a b sound. But at even more lower level, trying to sort of tackle this problem of how when you're faced with a really complicated sound mixture, you separate it out into different sound sources, then actually, if you're looking at a sound source, so for example, someone's mouth, if you look at someone's mouth, you're getting a rhythmical signal where the mouth gets wider as the voice gets louder and smaller as the voice gets quieter. And even the way that someone's perhaps moving their hands as they're speaking is giving you another sort of rhythmical cue. And we've recently learned that actually that very sort of basic information is enough to help you actually group together the sound elements that come from a sound source that's changing at the same time as what you're looking at. And that actually allows you to separate that sound source out from a mixture more effectively.
You mentioned there separating out where a sound is coming from. So what do we know about how our brain works this out?
In the auditory system, we have to rely on the fact that we have two ears. And actually, the brain has to detect incredibly tiny differences in timing and sound level that occur between the two ears. So if you have a sound, for example, to your right, then it's actually going to hit your right ear slightly sooner than your left ear, and it's going to be louder in that ear. And your brain is incredibly sensitive to these tiny differences in timing and sound level. We're talking about, you know, really fractions of a second here. And there's a third cue that you can use, which is that as the sound is funneled into your ear, it passes through the pinna, which is the part of the ear that you sort of see on the side of the head. And it has all of these kind of complicated folds on it. And as the sound comes in, it'll interact with those complicated folds in a way that depends on where the sound source comes from. And they actually effectively filter the sound and give characteristic notches in the frequency spectrum, which give you information about where a sound source originated from.
Well, it's good to know there's a reason our ears look so odd. That was Jenny Bisley from University College London's Ear Institute.